Gesturing toward the future, the ontological turn shifts validity from discourse practices to materialities of enfolding, enacting, and tracing rhizomatic multiplicities. The science that is about to be becomes thinkable with its entanglements, distributed agencies, and intra-relationalities. Here, matter matters in evoking a post-post validity that is imminent and responsible in moving from canonical to situated practices, where science hardly recognizes itself in its affect, force, and movement. This is the validity to be developed in the next generation. Inexact, I-N-E-X-A-C-T, and yet rigorous, incalculable, flowing along the lines of Deleuzian transcendental empiricism. End of paragraph. This is Patty Lather. I think there's a lot of dazed and confusion about trying to figure this stuff out. But I think our only hope is to be able to have enough philosophy behind us to be able to abstract out from these sort of stumbly, bumbly practices that people get involved in when they're faced with a real research problem. And I guess that would come out of my experience with the Women and AIDS Project, because we had to write that book. We told those women we would. They gave us their stories. We had to produce something. There was a big pressure there. And out of that pressure came practices that made sense in that context. But there was an awful lot of a priori theory that preceded our stumbling and bumbling towards these inventive practices. I would just say the field is our best friend. This is a reading of the introduction to the validity papers of my recently published book on post-critical methodologies, the science possible after the critiques, which is a compendium of selected works of mine over the years. And one of the four sections is on validity. And it is subtitled, Validity Has Been Very, Very Good to Me. The first set of papers is organized around the theme of validity that might seem like a strange obsession for a budding feminist methodologist in the early 1980s. But as one of Egon Guba's qualitative research students at Indiana University, I came by it honestly. He had just returned from a sabbatical where he pursued his own paradigm conversion from the quantitative work in which he had excelled to a qualitative world via the parallels between investigative journalism and what he termed at that time naturalistic inquiry. On my own parallel track at the time via a women's studies minor that introduced me to one of Karl Popper's students, Noretta Kortke, who taught me philosophy of science, I had a growing sense that Guba's take on this new world did not go far enough. Still insisting on objectivity, he clashed with my sense of feminist methodology as political to the core. What emerged out of this clash was my first experience of original thought. This resulted in the first article in the section, Research as Praxis, which began as the methodology chapter for my dissertation on feminist curricular change efforts in teacher education. It came out in 1983. There, alongside the uses of Antonio Gramsci for articulating a critical method, was an effort to extract abstract methodological practices of validity from three movements: feminist methodology, neo-Marxist critical ethnography, and Freirean empowering or participatory research. This grew up into my first major publication in 1986. I have often tried to figure out why this article hit like it did. I remember presenting an early version of it at the Bergamo Curriculum Theorizing Conference, and people responding in a sort of pale-faced way. I remember being at AERA after it came out and literally hearing my name bandied about in the streets in a you-have-to-read-it kind of way. I remember Henry Giroux and Peter McLaren calling me at home in Minnesota to congratulate me. What was going on? Discussing with various people has led me to believe that many critically minded researchers were thinking and feeling along similar lines, and that my rendition hit the nail on the head in a way that had a sort of shock value to it. This was of immense heartening to me for reasons that have less to do with fame and even the usefulness of one's work than of a divine feminist moment of calling the patriarchy to account. The subtext of research's praxis was that it was addressed to and motivated by the tendencies of what I call the neo-Marxist boys to do their critical ethnographies in a way that demonized teachers. The whole social reproduction genre of field-based inquiry consisted of largely male researchers being granted entry into the classrooms of largely female teachers to document how teachers were unwitting soft cops of capitalism. And most shocking to me, these findings were never shared with teachers. This contrasted greatly with the ethos of the nascent feminist methodology of the time that was dedicated to working with women as participants. Hence, I saw it as my mission to bring this huge contradiction between what critical, empowering, emancipatory researchers saw themselves as doing and how it went down on the ground in terms of practices of power and hierarchy. On a larger stage, it is the most cited of all my work to this day and continues to have a life, although I myself have some reservations. These reservations came early in 1988 and are included in the first selection in this book in the part on feminist methodology, where I delineate the challenges of postmodernism to feminist empirical work. The second article in this section, Fertile Obsession, Validity After Poststructuralism, is a 1993 effort to think validity under conditions of the post. By now, I have established a pattern of narrating methodology where I ground my efforts to articulate new practices out of empirical work that I found generative. In this case, moving from epistemological criteria of validity to counterpractices that take into account the crisis of representation. Here I make an argument for why validity should remain a term of choice and why a critical social science should remain the umbrella under which we do our work. I have made my Foucauldian turn by now, and of course Nietzsche is in there as well, with a focus on mass of methodology. This article is among my most cited, particularly across many disciplines, including more than you might think in the humanities. I remember having a great deal of fun as I came up with the four framings of validity: ironic, paralogical, rhizomatic, and voluptuous. I didn't have to look too far for exemplars either, given what was coming across my desk in terms of dissertations, the postmodern rereading of classics like Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, the work of my colleague Laurel Richardson, in my feminist reading group, Postmodern Studies, or PMS as we called it, and my own work on women living with HIV/AIDS. I used all of these to flesh out the intelligibility of validity after poststructuralism. And the fun involved is clear, and the transgressive validity checklist, which I carefully subtitled a simulacrum as a disincentive for any operationalizing. I did hear, by the way, that such still happened in an occasional defense. But given my newly developing interest in somewhat less stupid assessment, I might have to relaunch this checklist as it both is and is more than a joke. The Fertile Session article provides the basis for what follows it, an elaboration of the work on women and HIV/AIDS. This is entitled The Validity of Angels and was first presented in 1994 at the Society for the Study of Symbolic Interaction annual symposium that Laurel Richardson took me to. It was here that I met Adele Clark, who was instrumental in getting me an invitation to a 1995 University of California residency program on feminist methodology that was one of the highlights of my career. She also deepened my appreciation of the feminist science studies from which I have drawn so much. Article introduces the Troubling the Angels text and then uses the transgressive validity checklist to think through my practices in this book that combines interview data and researchers' reflexive ponderings in a split text format. Here, Walter Benjamin is put to much use as I turn to matters of confessional writing, textual strategy, and my deliberately ephemeral categories of validity after post-structuralism. I end with a quote from Holocaust researchers Shoshona Feldman and Dori Laub on what they call a singing from within the burning of a knowledge that well captures the tumult of the work on women and HIV/AIDS. My 2007 contribution to the Blackwell Encyclopedia of Sociology, it's called Validity, Qualitative, pulls together much of my early work on the topic. With a survey of varied discourse practices across the social sciences, focusing particularly on education, I track Lincoln and Guba's delineations across the years as a case study of shifts toward post-epistemic practices. It is useful for teaching and offering an encyclopedic concision, but even more concise and I think more useful is the 300-word rendition in the Concise Encyclopedia of Sociology that came out in 2011. In my teaching, I read this aloud, slowly, stopping for much discussion and questioning as a kind of test to see what students had absorbed from the class thus far. It often helped them nail the major themes of the introductory course. It also serves as a lesson in editing as they see the longer piece cut down to 300 words and begin to appreciate the difficulties involved. What they never see is the much longer version that was the original template for both these encyclopedia entries, published in the Handbook of Research on Teaching with the title Validity as an Incitement to Discourse, Qualitative Research and the Crisis of Legitimation. This much longer piece situates the conversation within the many turns in the social sciences and includes several exemplars to demonstrate new practices, as well as charts and a concluding section called Do We Have to Read Derrida? The second edition of the encyclopedia, which just came out this November, provides one of my proudest moments. Invited to do a new entry for it, I declined and asked if the early piece could just be updated a bit, to which they replied that they wanted new pieces only. Unbeknownst to me, the editor then commissioned a review to see if the early piece could be republished without changes, and perhaps to everyone's surprise and my pleasure, the review came back with one minor quibble. Otherwise, the reviewer felt the entry was still very much up to date, and then to quote from the reviewer or the editor, therefore we will publish the original entry again as part of the new edition. This made me inordinately happy, as it seemed a testimonial to the worth of the work over so much time and changes in theories of this and that. I then labored much over two changes I wanted to make: the inclusion of a new criterion of relevance, and secondly, a sentence or two that would gesture towards the future of validity under conditions of the post-post or the new materialism. Gutierrez and Penual, who had a piece in 2014 in Educational Researcher, provided me with a handy way into the former via their article called Relevance to Practice as a Criterion for Rigor. And Karen Barad helped me craft a new paragraph over the course of a week. Remember that this paragraph took me a week to write. All right, so here's this paragraph. Gesturing towards the future, the ontological turn shifts validity from discourse practices to materialities of enfolding, enacting, and tracing rhizomatic multiplicities. The science that is about to be becomes thinkable with its entanglements, distributed agencies, and intra-relationalities. Here, matter matters in evoking a post-post validity that is imminent and responsible in moving from canonical to situated practices where science hardly recognizes itself in its affect, force, and movement. This is the validity to be developed in the next generation. Inexact and yet rigorous, incalculable, flowing along the lines of Deleuzian transcendental empiricism. I cannot tell you how happy I am with this paragraph, for its concise rendering of the longer piece I would have had to write had I accepted the insistence on new work. I am equally happy for the space it makes for whomever is going to pick up from where I left off in trying to move social science in directions away from positivism and toward the succession of whatever is coming down the road of theory and practice. This section concludes fittingly with a tribute I wrote on the occasion of the death of Egon Guba in 2008. I say fittingly because it is to him I owe this fertile obsession with validity that launched and has so structured my career. It is to this obsession that I owe the job at Ohio State teaching qualitative research that has been my great good fortune. He set me up to address a pressing need, how to establish the legitimacy of alternative paradigm work in a way both within intelligible discourse practices of the social sciences and beyond them in taking account of the openly ideological research of critical paradigms. This within-beyond move is the foundation of my intellectual work.